Okay, we're on.
Okay, it is April 14th, 2020, and it's 10:04 a.m. I hereby call to order the meeting of the Story County Board of Supervisors. The call is originating from our administration building in Nevada, and public access is being provided via conference call. If you're not speaking, we would ask that you mute your phone if possible, because that helps people hearing. We are, okay. So I'm going to dispense today with the Pledge of Allegiance, since there's only one person in the public meeting room right now, and I'm going to go ahead and go on and explain why we're meeting in, why meeting in person is impossible and practical for Code Section 21.8.1. And the reason is because of the recommendations from gatherings, you know, more than 10 people in order to help slow the spread of the COVID-19 virus. So public access is being provided via the conference call. Audio recordings will be posted on the website as usual. I would entertain a motion to adopt the agenda.
This is Laura.
So moved.
This is Laura, second.
Okay, motion by Hedens, second by Olson. Any discussion? If not, Hedens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin, aye. Agenda is adopted. Next, we have updates on COVID-19, and these would be other than things that are already on the agenda. Are there any staff updates at this point? Hearing none, I'll go on to supervisors. Do you have any updates?
None from Laura.
This is Lee. And not from Lisa.
Okay. Thank you. We'll go on to item 7, which is public comment number 1. This is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. Yeah, I do know we have a couple of people from the Board of Health on the call, and if it's okay with you, if you'd like to talk maybe on item 9 when we're discussing your recommendation. Is that all right? Dan, is there any other public comment?
Yes, this is Terry Carter from Amos. And my question is having to do with when you get to the discussion of the budget. I'm just curious as to why in some line items there was so little money spent, specifically in mental health and juvenile court services. I just appreciate if there's an explanation to be had. Thank you.
Okay, well, I made a note. We'll discuss that then. Anything else from the public?
Carol, can you hear me?
Yes.
Who is this?
Carol.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, who is this, please?
Okay, this is Jan Flora from Amos. And I wanted to ask a question about the if we end up having a shelter in place, what will that mean for the homeless population in Story County?
Can we address that when we talk about the shelter in place?
Sure, that would be fine.
Okay. Okay, any other comments from the public? Okay, and then hearing none, I will close public comment session number 1, and we'll go on to item 8, which is a proclamation of National County Government Month for April 2020. I'm going to ask, would the supervisors, other supervisors join me in reading this? Maybe Loris, if you would start out and read the first three, read the heading of the first two whereases, and Lisa the remainder of the whereases, and then I'll read the rest of it.
Sure. Okay. Ada, this is a proclamation for National County Government Month, April of 2020, Counties Matter. Whereas the nation's 3,069 counties, serving more than 300 million Americans, provide essential services to create healthy, safe, and vibrant, and whereas counties provide health services, administer justice, keep communities safe, foster economic opportunities, and much more, and
whereas Story County and all counties take pride in our responsibility to protect and enhance the health, well-being, and safety of its residents in efficient and cost-effective ways, and whereas under National Association of Counties President Mary Ann Borgeson's leadership, NACO is demonstrating how counties matter, especially in supporting older adults, their families, and caregivers. And whereas each year since 1991, the National Association of Counties has encouraged counties across the country to elevate awareness of county responsibilities, programs, and services.
Now, therefore, be it resolved that we, the Story County Board of Supervisors, do hereby proclaim April 2020 as National County Government Month and encourage all county officials, employees, schools, and residents to participate in county government celebration activities. I would entertain a motion to approve the proclamation.
This is Lisa. So moved.
Second.
Okay, a motion by Hedden, second by Olson. And Loris, are you on speakerphone?
She's in the boardroom. I'm in the boardroom.
Oh, she's in the boardroom.
Yes.
Ah, maybe you need to get a little closer to the telephone. Having a hard time hearing you.
Okay.
Okay. Any discussion? Any discussion?
None.
If not, Hedden?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin, aye. Proclamation is approved. Thank you. We'll move on to item 9, and it's also continued in item 10. Item 9 is discussion and consideration of recommendation for Story County, from Story County Board of Health to the Board of Supervisors to request Governor Mound issue a shelter-in-place order. So, letter from the Board of Health is attached to this agenda item 9, and there is also a proposed resolution attached for the Board to consider as item 10. So first we'll talk about the recommendation from the Board of Health, and Louise or John, would either of you want to talk about that?
Lucy just pointed out he wasn't calling in until 10:15, so we're a couple of minutes ahead of where we would be. If you don't mind, I'd like to let the board, rest of my fellow board members know that I have struggled with this, and so I have, as we go through the discussion, do have a couple of questions directed toward the Board of Health about what this would look like, and I also have written a couple of other whereas or to add to the resolution should I decide to go forward to support it. Just want to let you know what's going to be coming from me while we have this time, okay?
I would like to withdraw John Bates and John McCall.
Yes.
Yes.
actually, this is John Cashin, and the time came on for the call.
Dr. Cashin, good morning.
Good morning.
We are on item 9, and I'm sorry that we were a couple minutes early, but we haven't really talked about it yet, but we're considering your proposal from the Board of Health.
Okay, very good.
What would you like to say to us?
The only thing I'd like to say is our thought process with it is that the official order of a shelter at home or shelter in place order that can be only placed by the governor will just emphasize the importance of following these measures to everyone throughout the state of Iowa. And I might add that the data, at least from New York, is looking like this social isolation, this shelter in place measures actually do slow this virus down. So I think it's really important that the governor does that. And we cannot do it as a Board of Health, and you cannot do it as a Board of Supervisors, but you can make the recommendations. Hopefully, if she gets enough recommendations from other Board of Supervisors and other mayors throughout the state, that she'll take it to heart and do it.
Dr. Cashin, this is Loris Olson. And hi, good morning. My first question to you is, have you been online or seen somewhere the actual proclamation that the governor of New York made, since you bring that up? So one of the things that I did, because as I said, you might have just been calling in, is I'm really struggling with this, about whether asking the governor to do this would make any difference and what it would look like. So I went online, and the New York Times on April 7th did a pretty comprehensive article about all of the various governments that are supposedly, and I say supposedly, that's my word, under a shelter-in-place order. And for New York, the governor never used those terms, shelter in place or stay at home. Instead, he recommended a 10-point plan. And there are some other states, while the media and entities are saying that shelter in place orders were issued, they were not actually stated orders of shelter in place. The governor did some kind of proclamation that affirmatively named which services were essential, which is the opposite of what Governor Reynolds has done, which has been to name which services need to close. And so that's why I ask you, I understand the data showing that, and I understand the importance of it. I'm trying to bring myself to get around at this stage what would be the real value of the governor saying those words, especially if they're not defined. And I'll give you another example that just made me smile, because I have some familiarity with Hawaii, and Hawaii has a shelter in place, but it exempts or names as essential activities surfing and swimming. Yeah, so not our problem here.
Yeah, but there you go, surfing here.
I understand. So what do you think?
I understand. Laura, you bring up a really good point. To me, and what you're talking about is semantics. One of the things that have been talked about in Governor Reynolds has talked about, and other people have talked about, that her
current orders are at times more stronger than shelter in place orders that are in other states. And I have no doubt about that, but at times semantics and impressions mean everything. when a person walks into this clinic and they see everybody masked, that means everything to them. I think the wording of shelter in place is very, very important. I'm of the opinion that while, and she will be, have the right and the power to make stipulations of what this will involve and what it won't involve, but even just using the terminology, I think, will be very, very important. Like, I have no doubt that since spring is coming up, that she will say that this is a, if she says that we have a shelter-in-place order, that she will say that agricultural workers and people putting their crops in are absolved from it or are not part of the shelter-in-place order. I understand that she will have specifics that will not be applied, but even the wording would be important. My gosh, there was a livestock auction. What was it, in southern Iowa? Like about a week ago. And there were like people from 150 people there from 4 to 5 states.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that it needs to go on. You know, those type of things.
Dr. Bannon,
the auction could have waited until the end of the summer.
Yeah. One of the things.
But that's what I'm talking. But those are the things I'm talking about.
And if I could add to that, the one criticism I have seen of what our governor has done is she get a list of what should close rather than what could stay open.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I was
saying a
fourth option. And it's like every time something that you think should be closed, you know, something like that happens, then she has to go back and change it.
Right.
So the, and that I think is and I've looked at the lists of all the states. And I think it is one thing that is too bad. It's because they are so different. It's hard to compare and say, you know, this one's better than that one because. But I think I agree with you that to have a shelter in place order in effect would have a greater impact upon people. Are there other questions or things to think about with us?
This
makes it easy.
Yes, this is my only comment. And I agree with Dr. Boston, but I do think semantics matter, and I think people recognize the term, you know, quote unquote, shelter in place and what that potentially means. I know that Governor Reynolds had referenced Dr. Fauci, and I know that Dr. Fauci has listed on state and is saying that we are doing a number of positive things to help try to mitigate the spread of COVID-19 with the closures. But I also know people aren't taking it. Many people are. Certainly many people are taking this pandemic very seriously. But I also see many people that are still congregating outside, groups of people that are congregating outside, not distancing themselves at least 6 feet apart. As the weather gets warmer, certainly anticipate seeing more people wanting to be outside and kind of being, you know, we'd all have to be a little bit more carefree at that time. My concern is, will that elevate the number of cases or the number of potential deaths? Because we're not, because people are just not staying at home. And I know that's going to be hard as the weather gets warmer, because we all want to be out and about and doing additional things. We have no idea for sure how long this is going to go on. You know, watching the news, you know, sometimes they're like, oh, it could be, you know, we're seeing trends slowing down. You know, we're looking nationally maybe August, and then I hear things, well, gosh, it may be longer, or it may, you know, start back up in a high capacity again into the fall until we have a vaccine.
To me, it's what measures do we need to take and do we need to articulate out to constituents that the more we stay home, you know, hopefully sooner this will be over with. I know there's no guarantees because this isn't a virus that we're familiar with. I'm not a medical doctor, so I'm not going to pretend to be one. But just listening to the discussions, that's all they keep saying is, you know, social distancing is what needs to be done.
We do have a question James Moore asked, so I'm going to get that returned to that.
Could we finish up on what Lisa said first? I'm not done with my question, so, and she fed right into one of them. Before we turn to the public?
Okay.
So, Lisa, you talked about as the weather gets nicer, more people outside gathering together. So that brings up about enforcement. And I called our Sheriff Fitzgerald, yesterday just to get his, to find out how it was going with him and the deputies and law enforcement. I know there's been a recent article in the paper also about this. And I said, geez, if you ended up with a shelter-in-place ordinance, you know, how do you think you guys would have to handle it or would handle it? And none of the law enforcement in Story County, at least, is looking at with much enthusiasm about having to write citations to do that level of enforcement. They are, I believe, already, they see a group kind of reminding them. Even though it's been said by the governor and the top law enforcement officer in the state, at least for public safety, that the governor's statement so far already carry the weight of law and it's a simple misdemeanor. So I'm interested in Lisa or Dr. Passion, anybody, how you see that all of a sudden this would be ramped up for enforcement when it came to the practicality of it relating to our law enforcement.
Well, this is John Passion. I will tell you that in other cities, they've had to kind of ramp up enforcement when people were not listening and they continue to have spread of the virus. Right now, the virus is increasing throughout the state and it's not slowing down. I think in Story County, our rate is phenomenally small because we are practicing social distancing, but I also feel that we're not testing a lot because most of the physicians are adhering to the strict IUPH guidelines for who to test and who not to test. That is, and if we started testing freely, I bet we'd have more of it in this county. But be that as it may, warnings are usually what they'll probably end up doing, and how they wish to enforce it will be really up to our law enforcement. And I think the issue I don't think we should get into the weeds about, well, how are they going to enforce it? That's kind of not our job. Our job is to tell them this is what the law is. You need to do what you need to do. And if they, you know, and I think they'll probably end up doing that continue to take those things where they'll continue to give people warnings, and if they do it a second time, then they'll give them tickets, and maybe they won't do it a third time. But considering we're talking about people's lives and decreasing a spread of a virus, we may have to do that.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. So, Supervisor Merkin, I asked my two big questions here, and so now I am interested in hearing what does this look like for various groups. So I think that's
So Jan Flores' question was, if there's a shelter in place, what does that mean for the homeless? it's a very good question. I know that the Emergency Residence Project now is renting motel rooms for the homeless because they needed to close their facility because they simply couldn't maintain distance there, couldn't maintain it safely. I also know that they're working on a there's work on a contract in case somebody who's homeless needs to self-isolate, and they've got that taken care of. Now, does that mean there's enough rooms for all of the homeless in Story County, or that all the homeless would go there? Probably not. But I do know that the Emergency Residence Project continues to serve the homeless and try to find shelters for them. Does anybody have anything to add to that?
No, this is Lisa. I think you cleared what the Emergency Residence Project is doing. I think you also referenced what our local public health is doing, securing some hotel rooms for homeless who are positive of where they could isolate and hopefully, you know, rest and hydrate and get over the if they have any symptoms related to the virus.
Mm-hmm. This is Terry Potter also for me. So my understanding from talking to Jody at ERP is that she has put out a request for funding of $55,000 to continue being able to shelter some people in a hotel for a 3-month period. And I believe that request went to asset, but I'm not 100% sure of that. I guess my question to you is, should that request fail for whatever reason, would the Board of Supervisors be prepared to provide funding to continue those, or to at least assist in that?
The asset administrative team is looking at all the asset funded agencies right now to determine what their needs are, and they're going to bring, once they have the information all put together, they're going to bring that to us, I believe, in a package rather than us looking at it, you know, agency by agency. So it's in the works and will be handed our way. So we'll need to look at that as a board and see what we can do to help. And we are also looking at our budget to see where, you know, what monies might be available. But that'll be it's on down the road, but it's in the process, yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Terry, Sandra King is on the phone, I think. Do you have anything to add to that, Sandra?
No, I think you did a good job of that. That request is on the way, and the county, what's being requested of the county is only a portion of that $50,000+ request. Funding is also being requested of the city and United Way.
Understood. Thank you.
Thanks, Sandra.
This is Laura. Oh, and to respond to Terry, I do continue to have concerns, so I'm looking forward to that coming forward. But ERP cut down the number of people they are serving because of the cost in the hotel. So I think that the questions are still valid about what do we do about the people that now ERP are turning away. But those discussions, as Supervisor Merkin and Sandra King have said, are discussions still to be had.
Are there any other questions?
This is Jim. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. I think that. One question is whether ERP will have the funds to service the folks that they regularly service. But people come to ERP because under normal circumstances they would like to be housed temporarily. And so I think as a question to look at further down the road would be if the Board of Supervisors should look more proactively to the rest of the homeless population and possibly think about an outreach program to see which ones would like to be housed, because what the Iowa Department of Public Health is doing is really reacting. The only people that they would be supporting would be those who already tested positive for the virus.
Yeah, and the reason the public health is doing that is that's their mission right now, in the pandemic planning. So that's why they're focusing on people who are homeless and have COVID-19 positive. So you're right, there's that, there's emergency, you know, needs, and it doesn't, yeah, none of that solves the problem. Jan, I would agree with you. None of that solves the problem. We need to keep our eye on that there's a bigger issue out there. But we also know that there's going to be other asset agencies that need funds, too, and that's one thing that we're going to, I think everybody's going to be struggling with is there are going to be so, there's just so many needs. So,
yeah,
I know what you're saying.
I might add that at the Board of Health meeting, and Dr. Passion can speak to this, there was also a discussion of FEMA funds that are specifically for the homeless. And it's not clear to me how those funds are applied for and if the Board of Supervisors would be involved in that, but that's something that also needs to be looked into.
Mm-hmm. And we, in fact, are going to be talking about that later on in the agenda, just because we're trying to get, you know, we're struggling with all the information that's coming through. There's tons of emails that come through every day, and some of them are very lengthy and some of them aren't very helpful. So, yeah, it's trying to sort of separate those and chat up and say, how do we get to the money?
Right.
Yeah.
This is Laura Olson again, Supervisor Olson. And Jan, just in comment or response to your comment there about, you know, funds being available, the National Association of Counties have put out a kind of a guide, a comprehensive guide, a couple days ago, explaining what the big blocks of money, how they were allocated. In the CARES Act, which is not FEMA, but is itself, it's like we think of FEMA as, but it's a portion thereof. But the point being that I did note that the amount of money to go for housing and homelessness, addressing that population, was significantly smaller piece of the pie than some other interests got. Just to make note to you that I looked at the amount, I don't remember it off at the top of my head, but I went, oh, that's not going to go very far, just to let you know.
Is that the CARES money that only goes to jurisdictions of 500,000 or more population?
No, that's a separate, if you will, that's a separate piece of the pie. Yeah, this was an actual piece of the pie that talks about homelessness, and it's a very thin sliver.
Okay. Anything else before we consider the resolution in front of us?
Oh, this is Sandra Jordan. Could I add something quickly? All of the asset agencies have been encouraged to seek funding that's being made available through the CARES Act. So I do know that ERP has been looking for additional funding and has likely found some. And that information will be provided so that the board can consider that along with the request.
Okay. Well, that's good news. Good news then, potentially. Thank you. Anything else?
Just a process question, Linda. So we have before us is number 9, which is the letter, and item 10 is the resolution. So I'm just saying, I just want to know where you're, how you're, the process that you're going through.
Okay, I'm going to consider we're done with item 9, we did the discussion. Let's go on to item 10 and consider the specific resolutions.
So this is
Provider, did you have some other thoughts about the resolution? This was as it was presented by the county attorney for us, and I updated the figures in it as of yesterday.
Yes, this is Supervisor Olson, Laura, and I do. I don't. I'd like to add some additional information into it, first of all, because I feel it's very, very general and vague. And so I feel that if we are going to do this, that we should build a stronger case about why we're doing it at this point in time. So after paragraph 5, I would recommend the insertion of two whereases. I'll read them, but I do already have them in a Word document that I can email out and I can give to Lucy, you know, so, and I'm right here at with my laptop at the board table if I need to get them emailed out in just a second. So after paragraph 5, I would look at inserting whereas. The state of Iowa recently said there are 411 intensive care unit beds and 642 ventilators in Iowa. And whereas the director of the Iowa Department of Health continues to express concern about the shortage of personal protective equipment for first responders and healthcare workers. And then it would go back to the original resolution. And then after paragraph 6, which is the next one in the resolution, go to whereas for an insertion. Whereas Iowa is expected for at least two more weeks to continue experiencing increases in the numbers of people testing positive for the virus, requiring hospitalization upon exhibiting serious symptoms and dying from complications of COVID-19, and then it goes back to the document for the and whereas. And that was one of the things that I, as I was struggling with what I would want to do with this or my vote, had to do with, I think our document is so vague, with the exception of the updated of the numbers. And I think that we need to build a better case about why we are now weighing in at this point.
Okay, and you've not emailed those out.
No, but I can email them right now if everybody's in front of a computer. I debated about, I wanted to hear the discussion prior about why we would even move to consider the resolution. So I'm going to get online and do that right now. Yeah, I'll be sending it to the two of you, to Auditor Martin's email account and Ethan Anderson's account.
Okay, and then maybe after you've done that, for the sake of everybody on the phone, you can read it again. And
sure.
I wasn't sure where exactly you had the whereas is coming in, so maybe you could.
Yes, absolutely.
May I ask a question, Louisa Tabatabai?
Yes, please do.
Could it please be emailed also to Dr. Passion and myself?
If it got your email addresses, hold on just a second, and I'll see. I'm typing in right now.
If you email it to me, Lawrence, if you don't have them, if you email it to me, I can forward it to them.
Okay, excellent. Yes, because I'm not getting Dr. Passions to come up right off the bat.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And John Cooley, too.
Okay, so Lisa, I'll at least then immediately forward them, okay? They are on their way. I just hit set. Okay. So we'll go back then, and if I heard the request correctly, it was to once again read them where they fit into the proclamation, correct?
And so the first one was after the fifth whereas?
Correct. So it.
The fifth whereas is the current data is that there are 710 cases of COVID-19 in Iowa and 43 deaths.
Correct. Then I
and
would.
Then you would put in.
Yes, then I would insert Whereas the state of Iowa recently said there are 411 intensive care unit beds and 642 ventilators in Iowa. And whereas the director of the Iowa Department of Public Health continues to express concern about the shortage of personal protective equipment, PPE, for first responders and healthcare workers. And then I would go back to the last whereas on the document, which is whereas all available information indicates that COVID-19 currently poses a widespread risk, a risk of infection, leading to a significant risk of harm to the population of the state of Iowa. And then,
may I comment a little bit on your additions, Florence? This is John Passion.
Sure, I have one more addition, but
first of all,
Go ahead.
When you mentioned about the ICUs available and the ventilators available, to make that more reasonable to be put into this proclamation, you should make a statement that there is growing concern that that might not be enough.
Got it. Okay. Good.
And I like your last thing about the risk of infection in Iowa is significant.
Got it. So going back up.
And Dr. Passon, Louisa, and John Kluge, I sent you the suggested changes.
Thank you.
Yes. This is Louisa. I've got it. Thank you.
And I got it too.
So Dr. Passon was here was saying, whereas the state of Iowa recently said there are 411 intensive care unit beds and 642 ventilators in Iowa, comma, an amount that...
I would say, I would say when I'm reading this after paragraph 5 insert, I would say something like this. Whereas the state of Iowa recently said there are 411 intensive care unit beds and 642 ventilators in Iowa, semicolon, and whereas the director of the Iowa Department of Health
Public Health?
Did you do it?
Screwed up there. Okay.
Okay. I would ask after that, maybe after that first sentence, our 411 intensive care beds and 642 ventilators in Iowa, colon, and there is continues to be concerned about whether that will be enough to take care of the Iowans that become sick with this virus, and whereas the director of the Iowa Department of Public Health. And then I would actually drop, I kind of have a hard time with this. I would expect it for at least 2 more weeks to continue experiencing increase in the number of people testing positive. I would just say whereas Iowa is continuing to experience increases in the number of people testing positive for the virus.
Okay.
We're putting
a limit of just 2 weeks on it?
At least 2 more weeks, because that almost gives her an out to say, I'm going to put this shelter in place for 2 weeks then.
Got it.
And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's a moving target.
Okay. All right. So to go, if I could read back what I just typed in here under the first one of my whereas suggestions. Whereas the state of Iowa recently said there are 411 intensive care unit beds and 642 ventilators in Iowa, and there is a continued concern that this will not be enough to take care of the numbers expected to become positive. Is that correct? What you wanted?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay, super. And then I went down to my third, which is the after original paragraph 6 insert, whereas Iowa continues experiencing increases in the number of people testing positive for the virus, blah, 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 blah. So I got rid of the 2 weeks there. Whereas Iowa continues experiencing increases. Okay?
March? Yeah, and after that, you've got something in last paragraph.
Yes. This was...
I'm talking about residents of Story County when we're talking about a statewide action.
You know, that's a good question. That's what happens when you do this over several hour period as you're doing other things. This last item down here was only as a possible suggestion based upon our discussion. If you remember, my first question to Dr. Passion is about why is it so important to actually do this proclamation and use the term shelter in place. And I wasn't sure what his response would be back, so I just kind of anticipated. And I didn't mean to put in Story County, I meant Iowa. But I no longer consider that valid for me. Dr. Passion answered that, I think, very well, talking about semantics. I also felt comfortable with the discussion of my other question, was what will this look like? So if you guys can ignore the last one, that was just me anticipating where the discussion might go. All right, so I'm not proposing that.
Okay, good, because it also doesn't talk about essential work.
I know.
Essential workers.
Yeah.
So, okay. So we've got a couple suggestions, and Marsh, you're getting those all together so you can give them to the auditor's office.
Correct.
Okay. Are there any other suggestions?
This is Lisa. I don't have other suggestions, but Morris, I want to thank you because I do think you put forth some very good suggestions. And Dr. Passion, I think you helped refine some of those suggestions as well. I guess I was just, my one thing is just want to make sure on the, Laura, your suggestion for paragraph 5 that entered is make sure it's addressed to the Iowa Department of Public Health. And
yes.
I think you caught that.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, does everybody think we have a good understanding of the resolution as it has been revised?
I think so.
Okay. Any need to have it all read, or are we okay with our understanding of it?
I'm okay with it, Louise. It's Fatima.
This is John Passion. It sounds good with those additions.
Okay. Okay. Anybody else? In that case, I would entertain a motion for approval of resolution 20-86, shelter in place.
This is Laura. I would make that motion.
This is Lisa. I will make that motion with the suggested changes.
Yes, sorry about that. I second that friendly amendment.
Okay, so Lisa has makes the motion to approve the resolution with the suggested changes. Ms. Olson seconds it. Any further discussion?
This is Lisa. I'm not just a question. So if this were to be approved, I'm not sure when it would then be sent down to the governor. My one question is, would you want to insert the most recent numbers? You know, since the current data is that there are 710 cases, would you want to update that even as of today?
You could, might I make a suggestion? You could put in just in parentheses as of April 13th.
Oh, sure. So we've got a specific date.
Yeah, April 12th, 2020, because those were the data from...
Today's the 14th.
That's right, this morning, right.
They were yesterday's. I got those after the briefing yesterday. So if we could put April 13th, 2020 after those numbers, and I also...
Right.
Yeah, and the world's...
Yeah, either put April 13th or do the... Or put a date of saying April 14th with today and the most recent numbers, because those numbers should be coming out relatively soon. But either way, but I do think it would be a good idea to make sure we have a date clarifying with what we're going off of.
Okay.
Let's talk all the details in before we actually have the vote. Lucy, do you have a way to get this on to the governor's office today?
Yeah. I mean, who's going to sign it? Should I use your stamp?
Yes. I was just going to authorize you to use my stamp because I'm not going to make it in today. But I'll come in tomorrow and sign everything else from the meeting. Okay, so what I'll do is I'll check the numbers and I'll get you the revised numbers if I could. Today's numbers.
Sounds good.
Okay, and then you can, and Lucy, you can make the other changes.
Yeah, Laura is going to give those to me, or she's already sent them.
I'm going to put that right now.
Okay, so we've got all the discussion, and I think we have all the details. There's a motion on the floor, so I'll call for a vote then. Hedman?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Resolution is approved, and I want to thank the Board of Health for having this discussion and bringing this to us, and I want to thank Loris for her additions and Dr. Passion for your and Board of Health members for your additions on this and hard work. And we will get it off today to the governor's office and hope that others join us in calling for this.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I'm going to sign out. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm signing off. Louise, it's about
thank you. Thank you, Louise. Okay, then. We'll go on to agency reports. We have a report from the Boys and Girls Club. I don't think we have anybody on the phone. I think they were just asked to file a report, given how we're meeting and everything. Were there any comments or questions about their annual report?
I had none. Laura.
Okay. I did not have any either.
Okay. Well, this is considered accepted then. We'll move on to item 12, consideration of minutes. We have minutes from our April 3rd special meeting and our April 7th meeting. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
This is Laura. I still move. I read them this morning.
Good.
And this is Lisa. I read them yesterday and I second the motion.
Okay. Okay, Olson?
Aye.
Evans?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Minutes are approved. Consideration of personnel actions. I entertain a motion for approving the personnel actions as listed.
This is Lisa. I so move.
Laura, second.
Okay. Evans?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Personnel actions are approved. Going on to claims, I would entertain a motion to approve the April 16th claims as listed.
This is Laura. I so move.
This is Lisa Tucker.
Olson?
Aye.
Evans?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Claims are approved. Next is the consent agenda. I would entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented.
This is Lisa. So moved.
Laura, second.
Hedlund?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Consent items are approved. And we are now at public hearing items. I haven't missed anything, have I? No. There are none. So next is additional items. Consideration of resolution 20-84 on commitment of fund balances. Is Lisa Markley there?
Present.
What would you like to tell us?
What I'd like to say is this is an uncommitment of the energy transfer funds that were committed back in 2016. there was an initial amount of $1.6 million committed. We've uncommitted a few times. My recommendation is that we uncommit another $329,360.13, which has been spent from July 1st until March 31st of the current fiscal year. I've listed the items that have been spent on. That leaves us a balance of, hold on. After this uncommitment, there is $1.156,650.86 still committed in the general fund. Okay.
$1,156,086.
It's actually from the quarterly report that I'm getting that information if you want it.
Okay.
Okay, so are there any questions?
So, this is Lisa. Lisa, so could you, I'm sorry, I must have missed something. So, why you're uncommitting the $329,000 plus out of the energy transfer fund for those specific programs because it is not needed yet in this fiscal year, is that correct?
So what I'm doing here is uncommitting this amount that has been spent this fiscal year. And I will uncommit the remaining 3 months worth at the end of June, beginning of July.
Gotcha.
Those numbers are in. So, it's an accounting situation basically that we need to uncommit those funds because they're being spent.
Gotcha. Thank you. Yeah, you kind of went out when you were explaining it, so that's what I was seeking clarification on. Thank you.
Sure.
No, I think it's on my end, so thank you.
Any other questions? Hearing none, I entertain a motion to approve Resolution 20-84 on committing energy transfer funds.
This is Loris. I believe it's my turn to make a motion. So I still move.
This is Lisa. I second.
Consensus?
Aye.
Simmons?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Now we'll go. So motion approved. We'll go to 20-85. Another appropriations amendment.
I just thought it was probably something that would need to be done to get through the rest of the month, or rest of the month and or 2 months until we amend the budget, which is right now I'm trying to get going for the middle of May. There are three departments that I would like to go ahead and appropriate the rest of the dollars. As opposed to the 95% that we have appropriated to these departments, I want to go ahead and appropriate the rest of those dollars because they're trending to being spent. So you've already budgeted these, they just haven't been appropriated at this point.
Okay. Do you think this will get them through the year?
It'll get them through the amendment that I'm going to bring forward in May.
Okay, got it. Any questions? Hearing none, I entertain a motion for approval of Resolution 20-85.
This is Lisa, so moved.
Loris, second.
Okay, Simmons?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Resolution is approved. Thank you. We'll go on now to some insurance issues, Alyssa Whitnell, and starting with the dental insurance renewal for FY21.
Yes, good morning, Board. I also want to, we have Debbie Bean, I believe, on the conference call from Benefit Source, our broker.
Good morning.
Good morning, Debbie.
Yes, the first item on there is our Delta Dental, which would be our dental insurance renewal. and we have been with Delta Dental now. This will be our fourth fiscal year with them. We do self-insure our dental plan in half for the last 4 years. With the renewal, we are able to lock in one more year of our fixed costs, so our administrative fees, which helps for budgeting purposes. So we pay Delta Dental $9, will be $9.09 per contract to administer our dental, and then we pay the claim since we're self-insured. What I do want to let the board know, while this locks our administration fees out through FY23, we do and always have the option to leave Delta Dental. I would recommend that, but that's with a 30-day notice. So it doesn't lock us into having to stay with Delta Dental. It just locks in those fees that they're going to charge us through fiscal year 23. So the other item I'm setting, recommending setting the premiums. Three of the plans are reduced by $1 a month, and then our single and plan two is consistent with what we currently charge. So there's no increase to employees for premiums for next fiscal year based on our claim utilization and the recommended rates from Delta Dental.
Okay. And the $9.09, that's an annual figure per.
No, that's a monthly.
Yeah, just for monthly. Oh,
monthly. Okay. Yeah. Oh, that would be a good deal.
No, that would be early to do. Okay, so $9 monthly.
Okay. Then for contract.
This is Loris. I have no questions. Just want to say I'm sure I'm pleased, and I'm sure employees will be pleased to see there's no change. And actually, some of the premiums are down a small amount. So thank you, Alyssa.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Lisa, do you have any questions?
Nope, I don't have any additional questions.
Okay, good. Then I'm going to change a motion for approval of the FY21 Delta Dental Insurance Renewal as presented.
This is Loris. I so move.
This is Lisa. I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion? If not, Olson?
Aye.
Hiddens?
Aye.
Working? Aye. Motion carried. Now we'll go on to the FY21 vision renewal. Alyssa.
Yes. Yep. So this is with Avisis. This year I am requesting the board add an additional benefit to our vision plan. And this would be in regards to lenses. Avisis came back and had a few lens options that we could take a look at. Our current plan does not cover anything but just your standard lenses. So they don't cover the anti-reflective coating or the scratch-resistant coating. So all those which you typically get when you purchase a pair of glasses and lenses, our current plan does not cover any of that. So they offered us a renewal with a lens package. And this would cover all those things, including level one progressive lens. So the benefit, if you purchase these lenses, would actually be up to about, they estimate about $400 of benefit. For the premiums are increased a little bit. For annually, for employees, would be about an extra $24 a year to have this enhanced benefit. So I am bringing that to the board. Otherwise, we can renew with our current benefits, and there is an increase, a little bit of an increase in the premium for that also. And I don't know if you want to add anything, Debbie.
It's just the minimal cost more than pays for itself as soon as you purchase lenses. Because Alyssa, as well as those items you mentioned, are progressive lenses, and most people end up with progressive lenses, and so level one progressives are covered in that new and improved benefit at no cost to the member.
Thank you. Any questions?
This is Lisa. So, Alyssa, did you say there was an annual increase of $24 for the employee? Did you say?
Yeah. So, if our vision plan, we have four tiers on it. So the employees have choices. Yeah. And for an individual, for the employee only plan, it's about an additional $2 a month, so $24 a year. In premiums. Now, our flexible benefit that the county offers to employees covers that's how employees typically pay for vision and dental. And that $145 still would cover family dental plan too and family vision insurance. So.
Right, thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions? I would entertain a motion for approval of the FY21 vision manual.
This is Lisa. So moved.
Laura, second.
Okay. Any further questions or discussion? Hearing none, Higgins?
Aye.
Wilson?
Aye.
Morgan? Aye. Motion carried. And now we'll go on to the health insurance renewal.
Yes. Health insurance has been interesting over the past few years. We've incurred a few large renewal increases and have really been working towards getting the county set into a position where we could move to a self-insurance model for like the past 5 years. So we, meaning Debbie, Dean, and myself, have spent a lot of time analyzing our renewals and our projected costs and have brought forth to the board a recommendation to move to self-insurance July 1st with the stop loss being set at $50,000 for our plan. So When you take a look at what I placed on the agenda for our documentation, I'm going to pull this all up here. It's a little difficult to explain. but if you look at that hand, it's called the board meeting handout. So the top section on that handout says rates charged for current plans. That would be our current premium for all of the plans we offer employees and based on our current enrollment. So we have about 209 contracts built into these rates here. That includes employees. We have a few retirees and then those from the ISU extension on our plan. So the top is our current premiums and what we charge, which would be about $3.8 million in insurance premiums per year. When Walmart did their projection for our self-insurance, the middle piece is what they believe we will spend being self-insured at that level, and they have just shy of $3.5 million. And then the bottom section of that spreadsheet is what they would base our maximum cost of the plan to be, which is about just shy of $4.2 million. So when you take a look at this, our fixed costs to be self-insured per year are just shy of $800,000, and we would have about $3 million to pay claims for that portion. Now, I'm going to let Debbie talk a little bit about moving to self-insured and why the county would want to look at that option at this point.
Thank you, Alyssa. I would dovetail off of something you just said, that we have spent a considerable amount of time looking at data and crunching numbers, specifically the information that's been provided to us by Walmart. And so strategically, of course, we've been, as you mentioned, Alyssa, we've been trying to move to an environment where we could become self-insured, purchasing reinsurance through Wellmark so that we can protect ourselves from high claimants. And again, just to reiterate, you mentioned that we're looking at a $50,000 stop loss, which essentially means that if any member has claims that exceed $50,000, Wellmark would pay those claims, those eligible expenses, at 100%. So it would insulate our risk on high claimants. And then that maximum cost that you just mentioned of $4.15 million, Wellmark would insulate us from having total claims for all our population above and beyond that point. But we are in a position right now with claims being good, and we have a scenario where we have a situation where what we're funding falls right about in the middle of Wellmark's suggested exposure and maximum exposure, which is about as good as you can ever get when you move into a self-insured environment. And we have a pool to help insulate us for 3 to 4 years if we were to get into a maximum expense environment, which, by the way, happens very, very seldom. Because underwriters and actuaries set these premiums in such a fashion that they're pretty good at predicting what your suggested expense is, what they think you'll spend. And then they put a 25% corridor on that before they have to pay if the group exceeds an aggregate level of expense, or in this case, the $4.159 million. And it seldom happens that they have to pay. They're really quite good at nailing down what they think you'll spend. It's not an absolute certainty, but it is a very high probability. And so if we move into self-insurance, it allows us to be in a scenario where we're paying fees and we're paying reinsurance costs, which are a small portion of the entire cost of the health plan. And we're paying ourselves. And so what we spend on claims, we spend on claims. And if we're fortunate and we have a good year, we'll be able to continue building the pool. And the longer we can build the pool, the better position we're in to sustain the next 5 to 10 years worth of health insurance costs and escalations in health insurance costs. Because when you're self-funded, you may have an increase that's a little less than desirable on your reinsurance, but reinsurance is probably about 18% of the total cost of the plan, as opposed to buying or continuing to buy a fully insured plan, where if you find yourself in a posture of having an 18 or 15 to 20% rate increase, it's on the entirety of the plan. So you really have flexibility in structuring the benefits you want. You have flexibility in structuring who's eligible for the plan. You have flexibility in funding a pool to help pay for future rates of increase. It just gives you a lot more long-term stability, which is why most large groups strategically try to get to an environment where they can become self-insured.
Any questions?
This is Loris, and I have no questions. I just want to thank Alyssa and Debbie for moving through, and I suspect Lisa Markley might have had a little bit of contribution there in some of those financial number crunching figures, and thank them for this, because this was a goal and a program established by a previous board, and to see it come out, which I think will be of everyone's benefit, is a good day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Reynolds, do you have any questions?
No, I don't have any additional questions. I do just want to thank Dr. Wilson and Debbie for their detailed information in going to self-funding.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I would like to thank you both as well. I know it's been a, it's not just a year's work, it's been several years' work, and the numbers look good, and I talked to Melissa yesterday and asked some questions, clarifying questions, so I have no other questions. So I just want to thank you as well.
Thank you so much.
Sure. And I would entertain a motion to approve the recommendation to move to a self-funding model for health insurance as described and to continue the current plan offerings with no premium increase for FY21.
Whose turn is it?
I think it's Laura's turn.
Okay. This is Laura. I so move as this program for our health insurance for fiscal year 21 as presented.
I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion or questions? Hearing none, Olson?
Aye.
Evans?
Aye.
Markin? Aye. Okay. Thank you very much. And Debbie, thanks for being on the call.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you.
We will move on then for discussion and direction regarding the Technical Committee for Housing Needs Assessment Study. Leanne Harder. Leanne, are you on the call?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning.
I outlined four questions in the memo I prepared for the Board of Supervisors. The reason I'm bringing this forward for you today is so that if formal action by the board is required to appoint a technical committee for the housing study, I can bring that forward on Friday's meeting, and then we can start setting some dates for those meetings. I do have a list of potential names I've been given. If the formal action is taken Friday, or if the directions to take formal action on Friday, I will reach out to those individuals and ascertain their level of interest in being appointed. I'll reach out to them either way. Are there any questions for me on the memo?
Can you say, just, there's a staffing committee as well. What's the difference going to be with the
staffing committee is combined with those individuals that were part of the original process to develop their request for proposals, and then go through the process to review the proposals that we received and ultimately provide a recommendation to the board to select RDG. They will really, that committee will be kind of bouncing ideas off more frequently than the technical committee, kind of maybe the more housekeeping things, the less big picture items.
So this is Laura, and this is a surprise to me that there's this staff support committee, because I understood that the committee that were being formed, now you're calling the technical committee, that those were the people who really would be providing that that coordination, input, kind of hands-on oversight, and then there would just be the need for staff to provide, help assemble data, help RDG with really what I would consider the technical or process questions. So back in the 1997/98 study, as I talked to one of the co-chairs of it, and also had some preliminary discussions with a couple of the consultant entities, one of which was someone from RDG, they all said, don't make your committees get too big. You know, that the 97-98 ended up with, I believe, something like 24 or 26 people providing that type of level of input and guidance to the RDG who did the original study, and that it was awkward at times. And so seeing this many people on this staff support committee, I'm concerned that it has a real possibility of it overtaking the emphasis and the significance of what you're now calling the technical committee, which are made up from people in the community.
So,
what we're doing, following the model that we did with the C2C plan, and for what we're called back to those days a few years ago, the staff committee, the ones that we can review the drafts before they make sure it's in line with county policy, look at the numbers, have fewer set of eyes on it to make sure those issues are addressed before it goes out for full review by the technical committee. It's kind of the simplest form, people in addition to me on county staff or contract with the county that know what's happening, and the policy level discussions, the public input on that aspect, that's the bigger technical committee. It does follow what we do with the C2C plan, where when we got drafts, we ran it through that staff committee to make sure the spelling errors are corrected. County is capitalized the way you want it. Those types of smaller, minor issues. So we don't use the technical committee to spend time doing that.
Okay.
That makes sense.
So I've heard three different things. I've heard it. I don't know if that's not what you said, but this is how I received it. I heard from the staff support committee is the ones who'd be having much more contact with RDG and feedback to them. That was the first thing I heard, and then I asked my questions. Then I heard that it would be just so that the draft or drafts would coincide with the county policy, and now I've heard it's just to correct grammar errors. And so I'm sorry, I'm still confused about what the staff support committee role would be. I like that you then identified what you're calling the technical committee. I like it calling instead the policy committee. That seems to be much more.
The technical committee is what the language is from RDG's proposal.
Okay, so we could make.
I'm trying to test myself to make sure it's consistent with that.
Let me try something to just simplify this, if I could. Why don't we just take all the names of the people who have been on the staffing committee and who have been suggested for the technical committee and forward all those names to RDG as suggestions, people for them to check with and see if they're interested in how they can help, and let's not get into a formal appointment by the board.
For just the staff you're talking about.
Okay with everybody?
Are you talking about just for the staff?
All the names.
So you've asked, would that be okay? And here's my perception after having not only sat on the board, but also having covered boards, not only the Stewart County Board, but seeing what has happened over at the City of Ames and having covered it in other locales. And when you've got something about this type of study that is so significant to the community involved in such a large project, that everybody there will be people who we didn't name to begin with, who then, if we don't formally appoint them, those people will come back and say, well, wait a minute, there was no process, there was no opportunity to vet, etc. So no, I think this is way too significant and has the possibility of having much too impact on decision makers, both in the private sector and the public sector going forward, for us to just not do a formal appointment process for the technical I'm calling policy committee.
Okay, I just got something else as you were talking. This is good. This is making me think more about this. Are we perchance not thinking about the communities themselves and who they would like to appoint? Should we maybe reach out to the mayors and ask them to appoint somebody to represent their city on the technical committee?
I like that. I like that.
As a student?
Yes. You know, I did not contact any of the people who were on my kind of suggested people list. I just presented because I didn't know where we'd end up here, but I'm very comfortable with even RDG had said that we should probably have one person from each of the smaller communities, okay, and suggest at least, or at the 10 smaller communities. We know that we're going to want a couple of people who have overview, and we know, like, a, you know, possibly somebody with good real estate, et cetera, but really, we should give people in the community an opportunity, and the mayors an opportunity, to indicate who they might be interested in. I know it slows the process up a couple weeks, but it really means then who we've got on this study are people who are invested in it, who understand and who know and come with the local knowledge.
You know, this is, and I like that because I think what it does is it gives those smaller communities, well, actually the, you know, all of the communities, more buy-in because they have a an ability to state who they thought would be the best person to be a part of this committee and what would be a comprehensive study that will impact not only the county but their community as well.
And I also think there's a role for the people who, John Hall, Dustin Ingram, and the other people on the staffing committee on this, because they have some expertise having gone through the RFP process. I know we get into a larger group here, but I'm wondering if those folks shouldn't be folded in as county representatives. Because we also want the county represented because we're doing a study.
Oh, this is Laura. That makes sense. That makes sense. I like that much better as far as the concept. Yeah, it does increase it, but it does offer a lot of good representation.
Leanne, do you have any thoughts about the direction we're headed in here?
I would be more than happy to reach out to the mayor if he was the board of directing to do so, and just touch base with RDD on the schedule. Just going back to staffing, the staff committee, I do think there might be a need for them to meet more regularly than the technical committee. Again, just going back to the C2C plan, we were able to make the steering committee members the larger C2C steering committee meeting more effective because we had caught those grammatical errors. Like I said earlier, those housekeeping items at the staffing level before taking it for the entire committee.
So may I summarize then what we have? Or Lisa, did you have anything else to say?
No, not good.
Okay. So the direction of staff would be for Leanne to reach out to the mayors to get somebody, ask for a representative for their community to be on the technical committee, and also that we fold in the folks who are on the staffing committee as part of the technical committee, as well as having, and Leanne, that would be as well as you utilizing the staffing committee, as you described. Are we in agreement?
This is Laura. Uncomfortable with that.
Yeah, I'm cool.
Okay, well, super. Thank you very much, and thank you, Leanne. Is there anything else?
I will be back in front of the board hopefully in within, it's probably going to be 2 weeks because the council agenda is needed with the formal appointments. Is that what I'm hearing from the board?
Yes.
Okay. I apologize about my voice. Thank you.
Well, that's okay. Rest your voice. I know it's still strained. Thank you very much for this. Okay, we'll move on then to discussion of consideration of responsibilities for financial tracking of COVID-19 impact. We put this on the agenda after a a kind of ministerial discussion on how we were going to, knowing there were going to be a lot of economic impacts and also lots of federal aid to the state that we want to keep track of, how we pull all of this together as it's kind of unfolding. And I did a little bit of thinking about this. Is it okay if I just kind of tell you what's on my mind?
Sure, sure.
Okay. I really got two questions that we're going to need to track is what's going to go on with our revenues? What projections are we going to be looking at for, FY21 and beyond, and keeping closer tabs on revenues than we normally have needed to, and I'm looking at property tax collection, local option sales tax, road use funds, and grant availability. So those were the big things that I saw that could be impacted. And what I was thinking is we just need to keep in touch regularly and ask the treasurer, the auditor, our engineer, conservation department, and maybe some other departments who have big, funding in those areas, just maybe to kind of keep us apprised as to what they see going down the road. And I thought maybe we could just ask every few weeks for people to give us updates. The other was the federal aid, and I know Sandra King is looking at the CARES, and I think Leanne and Darren were going to be looking at FEMA. There doesn't seem to be a lot of information coming down the pike about FEMA, so it's just kind of keeping up to date on what we might be doing there. But I was just thinking, if we also ask them to give us regular, maybe every other week, updates on what they have seen, so that all the supervisors can get the information at the same time and kind of keep it in front of our mind, and in front of our minds as we make decisions in 21. That's as far as I have gotten.
This is Laura, and I like that, because that was, as I was making some notes also, is what do we need to know, and what do we want to make sure that we prevent? And one of the things I'd like to see us prevent is everybody tripping over each other, and because you've got different groups, getting the information together. And so I like about, I was thinking along the same line. I would, with this reporting of every few weeks or every other week, what we kind of look at as according to what we need, does keep us and keep the taxpayers and keep the other elected officials apprised about where we're going. And since this is going to be a long-term moving target, as we in a future board, is going to have to figure out, where this is financially, just so that we know who's going to be kind of asked to provide information at various points, and maybe they won't have any information. But at the same time, we're going to know that people are kind of keeping an eye on it. And I like also then I think that it'll become clear when a Board of Supervisors needs to say to everyone, you need to start doing something in unison. And I think we've done that already, or really I think the Auditor's Office kind of took the initiative on that also, and along with what we know about reimbursement from FEMA. One of the first projects or reports I'd like to see maybe taken, given to us, would be on the, with the federal aid, getting FEMA nailed down at least what's a reimbursable cost when it comes to administrative. Now, don't know that we can do that right away, but keeping the time, track of the time card, figuring out what exactly is it down the road the data will need. Maybe that would be the first project, I would think. So, thanks.
I think those are all good ideas, and I like the idea of having staff come before us. You know, I don't know if we want it every week, maybe it's every 2 weeks. It just kind of depends on how quickly information is updated or provided and stuff. I think the other thing that we also want to just kind of keep an eye on is any additional potential stimulus packages that may impact counties.
Could you say that again?
I think we also need to keep an eye on any federal legislation, any additional stimulus packages that may impact counties. We want to be able to monitor that. And when the Iowa legislature goes back, or however they're going to end their session for the year, I'm not quite sure, what other legislation may impact counties, either in a positive or negative, either way, as we try to navigate through our financial responsibilities and still delivering of services that impact the citizens of Story County.
I think that keeping our own revenues, you know, keeping track of that and saying how are those coming, that's going to be the easier part, because that's already kind of in people's jobs. It's that federal aid, that's the one that concerns me, is because I don't know, I was forwarding a bunch of emails to people. I've kind of said, I'm going to put forward emails to you, you can subscribe to it at the bottom if you really want to see it, because there's so much coming through. And some of that FEMA stuff, my gosh, I mean, I hate to say it, but 90% of the talking points.
Yeah.
I wish it were more succinct. You know, it's too hard to separate the wheat from the chaff in them. So I'm more at a loss of who we have as point person on keeping track of the federal legislation.
So this is Laura, and I think that I've already, we've seen a couple of good ideas from staff. One of them being, Leanne Harder said she was working on creating a folder in the S drive that would accumulate FEMA, and information. I would suggest that another folder under that, or maybe a separate folder entirely, would be how then the CARES Act is related. As I kind of told you, I think on a previous phone call, Joni Ernst had indicated already the Congress is looking at a fourth stimulus package or a phase four, and that's going to focus for counties and governments, that there's going to be a much bigger push. So then another idea, I think it was good, is that if we had what was considered about Leanne and Darren watching the FEMA side along with consultation from Keith Morgan. But I know that Sandra then, with keeping track of the stimulus packages themselves, and if those, Leanne and Darren on one part would be adding significant information that they felt to that folder. Sandra's looking at information and adding what is you know, she feels is down from the CARES that's significant. We'll have, I think, some good sets of eyes on the initial screening. Does not mean that individual departments won't look too, but it at least would be, if they were responsible for kind of sorting the wheat from the chaff, that might help everybody.
And I really like to use it significant, because if we load up the S drive with every single thing we're getting from the S right now. I guess I would encourage people to just only put something on there if you think it's going to be really helpful. You know, we want to keep track of it. And that does mean reading through all this stuff, unfortunately. Or at least reading enough of it to know this isn't very useful. And we'll probably miss something. I mean, we can't catch everything, but that would be a good start. Is it okay if I just write a memo, try to write a memo summarizing our discussion?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I think I'm fine too. And then everybody's on the same wavelength about what's happening. Yeah, I think that's important.
Yes. I'll draft a memo. I'll send it out to the other supervisors, and let's just, you know, I think we've had enough of a discussion that we can just, you know, finalize the memo and then bring it back. Okay.
Sounds good.
And okay. And we can just send it out, you know, for an agreement on the whole thing.
Yep.
And the other thing I think we want to talk about at some point is filling positions, and there's new hires, and I'll just bring this up because we had a discussion on conservation board meeting last night. They are doing their approvals on some temporaries for the summer, but Mike's not bringing them on yet, and he's not going to bring the request to the Board of Supervisors yet because he doesn't know when we'll be opening parks and doing this or that. I think we have a return to work date right now, but we don't know that that's really going to be our return to work date because we are going to be watching the numbers and watching what's happening. So I think it might be worth us telling folks, you know, or maybe talking about, do we want to say hold on new hires except for it's somebody very essential?
I thought we said that already. I thought we asked if folks could was to hold off to later.
Okay, do we need to make that official, or do you think that people have that understanding?
Well, I don't think it'd hurt if we put it on a future agenda, maybe the Friday agenda, to make it official. It's in a memo already, but it was memo explaining another action. So it wouldn't hurt to make it very clear to everybody. Yeah. And also then we could... Go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
I was just going to say... You go, Linda.
Okay, here's what I was going to say. It would also give us an opportunity to set up a process to approve a position as being essential. Because we might say, okay, hold off unless it's essential. Well, we'll think everybody is essential. So maybe there should be a process at this point.
Yep.
Yeah.
Alyssa, are you still on?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, I am.
Could you and I talk about that and maybe draft something up?
We can get something on Friday's agenda that would address that and that the board could discuss.
Yeah, I think that would be good because otherwise we're playing a guessing game. As you know, what does anybody think is essential or when do we do this or that? Okay. And we can chat, or if you want to just send me a draft or send us a draft, that's good.
Okay.
So I'll draft a memo on financial monitoring, so to speak, and Melissa will draft something on the essential employee hires, how to process for them. Anything else?
No, good conversation.
Yeah, good discussion. Okay, let's. Lisa, did you have anything else?
No, sounds good.
Okay, then I'm going to go to Lucy Martin for consideration of purchase of an OMATR, whatever that is.
Omation. Yeah. So,
okay, tell us about it.
Right, so we're confronting two things right now. A significant uptick in expected absentee ballots for the foreseeable future. So for a primary election, which is what we have right now, we usually do about 20% absentees. There's a push by both Story County and the state to do as many as we can. Still, it's not going to be a huge number for Story County, but pushing the absentees might also raise it. For November, I expect the same. We normally do about so I'm talking about maybe opening 35,000 ballots. So, and then also a decrease in the number of people I could hire to work with polls, to work absentee boards. You know, people are afraid. It's already been a crisis. This is, you know, separate from a worldwide pandemic. Hiring people to work elections has become harder and harder with every passing year. So, and then we also have technology for opening envelopes, believe it or not, is greatly increased. I remember when I first started with the county, we did have a high-speed letter opener. I think we had inherited from the treasurer's office, but what it did was just slight open, and it was actually damaging balance and things like that, so we didn't use it. So right now, the absentee board does all this by hand. So for the price listed here, probably within three or four elections, it would have paid for itself, because that's what I'm paying people to open envelopes right now. What do we buy this fiscal year, next fiscal year? It's going to be needed, and it's also going to be unbudgeted. So my preference is to buy it this fiscal year and try it out in the primary so that it's also going to affect our process and how we break up the absentee board and team to open and separate ballots. But the technology is really nice. It actually sort of feathers across there and opens the envelope so you don't destroy any of the contents. Polk County has purchased four of these, but like at a higher level, they got like a $10,000 machine. I mean, Polk County is its own separate, they're much larger than Story County, but I think everybody's anticipating a need for this. It would help me both with staffing and a time issue that we would have for the absentee. And this was the lowest quote we got. The next guy's quote was like $1,000 more.
Yeah, it looks like that this can open between 200 and 2,000 at least pieces of mail a day.
Yeah, it might even go faster than that, but I don't think we want to run it at that speed. So, it is much nicer than like just the whole razor slicing the top. But if a ballot does get damaged, it's gone, it's thrown out. It is remarked by the absentee board, but then that's a time consideration as well, which is why you do open them by hand just to make sure that something gets damaged. Does everybody understand?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's unbudgeted, but do you have money in your budget for it?
Not in this line item, but I think within the auditor's office and the elections, I will have money for it, yeah. Because of COVID-19 and the impact it has on staffing and how we're going to do precincts and things like that. So, yeah.
Okay. Any other questions?
No.
No. Okay. Entertain a motion for the purchase of the desktop mailing letter opener for absentee ballot processing for $5,375.
This is Lisa. So moved.
Laura, second.
Okay.
Thank you.
Further discussion or questions? Hearing none. Heads?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin, aye. Motion carried. Okay.
You're going to watch it.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Department reports. Quarterly report, engineer. And this is just submitting the report. Darren's not on the phone, is he? Okay. Any comments about the report? I seem to have lost my agenda. Excuse me. I'm heading back to look at it.
This is Laura. No, we've met with the engineer recently regarding the five-year plan. He's been into discussing a couple of other things. So I felt that the report was nice and detailed, and it just recaps some of what had been said before. And so I don't have any questions.
Yeah, I didn't have any questions at this time either.
Okay. Accept the report then, and move on to other reports. Lisa Markley, are you there?
I am.
What would you like to tell us about the third quarter report?
I'd like to tell you that the third quarter report is pretty much on track of where it typically is this time of the year. I do want to answer the question of a previous caller about two departments that their expenses are fairly low at this point in time.
Yeah.
The health department is only 16%. Keep in mind that that's an annual payment that we pay to the region, so we will not be making that payment until after the budget is amended sometime in May. So the dollars that we've spent there, the 15% we've spent, is actually only local dollars at this point in time. And then juvenile court services, the only thing you budget, the juvenile court budgets anymore, is shelter care. And obviously, because we only are at 40% of the budget, that means that we haven't had as much shelter care for this fiscal year. I'm assuming that that's going to trend to leave about $20,000 or more in the budget, in that line item, for this juvenile court
services. Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't get back to that question before now, but Terry Potter, are you still on the phone? He probably isn't.
Hopefully he's still listening.
Okay. Well, so if he does call and wonders, we know now, so we can answer that question.
Correct.
So, thank you.
So, yeah, we have five departments that are over the 75%, very slightly over for the majority of them. Everybody else is trending fairly below the 75% of the year. And you want to make the comment that some of the bigger departments that had a lot of projects going on have kind of not continued on with some of those projects at this point because of staffing situations and such. So that's one of the reasons that we're trending lower. Also, we do still have the engineer has spending, budgeted to spend the whole $8 million worth of, all the dollars that were going to be bond, but that's not going to be the case. So there'll be an adjustment there. So the fund balances are looking, obviously, if you look at the second portion of the fund balance information, we still are at 63% of the year with general fund, 73% of supplemental, 49% of secondary roads, and then on the revenue side, we are at about 74% of the revenues being brought in. There are 12 departments that are over 75% at this point in time, which, like I said, is pretty comparable to every other year. But it's a little misleading at the bottom because that $57 million amended budget is actually including $5 million that's not going to be received in for bonding. So, any questions for me?
No, thank you.
No, I don't either. You actually answered my questions in your explanation, Lisa, so thank you.
You're welcome.
That's a good presentation.
It is.
Answered all the questions. And succinctly, that was great. Thank you. Okay, so we'll go on to upcoming agenda items. Anything?
This is Lisa.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, this is Lisa. I don't have anything from any of my committees that I'm on yet that will be looking to put anything on the agenda.
Okay.
And this is Laura. It's not anything, nothing that I haven't already mentioned, you know, in previous meetings.
Okay. Okay, I'll just give a heads up from conservation. Last night they reviewed some of the restrictive covenants and other related documents that they've been working on the Batson property.
Yeah.
In Northwest Story County, Kirk Friedrich's proposed development there, and they will be, some of those things are going to go to Planning and Zoning Commission, their first meeting in May, and I think then will come to us our second, I think it's May 12th. So they're making progress on all of that, and I think we'll be close to getting that to seeing how that's all coming about.
Okay. Thanks, Linda. One of the things that will be interesting is I don't recall ever seeing restrictive covenants coming before the Board of Supervisors before, but I assume this has to do with the agreement we have with them about the natural prairies. Okay, all right, thank you.
Yes, when the previous board had approved that going forward, or approved, I think it was approved the change in the zoning.
Yes, okay.
Yes.
Thank
there
you.
Was a, yes, that's what that's about. Sorry. Lisa, did you have anything? You said you didn't you?
For upcoming agenda items, I do not know.
Okay. Public forum number two, comments from the public on items not on this agenda, and I did notice that we did not have the text number, the number to text in on this agenda, and I'll get that corrected for next time. But are there any members of the public on the phone who'd like to make a comment? Items not on the agenda. Okay, hearing none, I'll go into liaison assignments, committee meetings, updates, and announcements from the supervisors.
Who wants to go first?
Go ahead, Lauren.
Oh, okay. So tonight I would normally have my Central Iowa Regional Housing Authority meeting. However, there is not a meeting tonight. I do want to let you know that an update from the staff at CERHA has informed all of the board members that the staff is currently not processing any new Section 8 vouchers. And the reason is because it's a quite detailed process involving a couple of stages where there needs to be face-to-face contact. And also an inspection, a physical inspection of the proposed property. And so they're not doing that right now. So tomorrow we've got Drainage District Food Story meetings in the morning by phone, then the CMT meeting by phone, and then there's an emergency management commission meeting by phone. Normally I would not listen in on those. There's a couple of items on there that are of interest. I just want to listen to Linda. You're our representative there, but I may come in as a member of the public just to hear a little bit about some of the ESF functions that they're now working on. On Thursday, there's a 7:30 a.m. meeting for the Workforce Innovations Program. They're still trying to, with now all of this COVID, sort some things out. What a surprise there. Okay. Then I'll be attending a Zoom meeting that the Chamber has arranged with Debbie Durham to receive an economic update. Then report back to everyone. The Hunger Collaboration is still planning on meeting on Thursday afternoon. That'll also be an electronic meeting. And then the jurisdictional update is Thursday that night. So I'll be on the phone a lot on Thursday. And then Friday, there is another discussion hosted by about community and economic development. For the Story County Economic Development Group that I'll be attending. Bye, Paul. Thank you.
So this is Lisa. So I've been still working with Boost. We've completed our second round of interviews, and the committee has identified someone that they are interested in potentially proposing the position to. So that the group is still working on that. Tomorrow, same as Laura, I have the drainage district meeting, or that's a time for them. And the CCMT, I'm not sure if I'll be on the Emergency Management Commission meeting or just let Linda for you to give an update on that. Thursday, I do have a Zoom meeting with Aging Resources. It's our annual, it's our monthly meeting. And then Friday, I do have on my calendar at least a placeholder for a Board of Supervisor meeting for Friday.
Sure.
I have the the Community Economic Development Zoom meeting that I think Dustin sent out today for Friday, that I put that as a on my calendar. So that's it for this week. On Monday, I do have a WebEx, kind of like a Zoom meeting with Carla and Sandra. Carla and I usually meet up prior to our CICS meeting. So our CICS meeting will be next week on Thursday. We just kind of go over what things are going on in Story County prior to that one. And since we can't meet in person, we're doing it through WebEx. I will give an update too. I'm on the public health leadership class. That class got canceled for last night. They're actually pushing it out, so my next one won't be till June. So our kind of our graduation date won't be till later in the summer, which is fine. It's just how everybody's trying to make reorganize and do more things via Zoom stuff based on what's going on. The Stepping Up initiative is still meeting and moving forward with a potential conference in the fall. We were supposed to have a conference call this Friday morning. They are actually postponing that till May, so that will be our next one, and I can provide an update there. And the Mental Health Expo group so far is still moving forward and looking at having the Mental Health Expo in September. And they are doing Zoom meetings Friday mornings at 10, so I usually have to get an update from them because we're having our board meetings at the same time.
Okay.
And I've done a lot of meetings as well.
Yeah, we're getting used to Zoom, aren't we? Drainage district meetings tomorrow. Kind of the same thing. It's with the drainage district, the CCMT, and yes, I'll do the emergency management meeting and the jurisdictional executives. And it sounds like Alyssa is going to have something for us on the board meeting Friday, so we should plan on having that. Probably a shorter one than this. I think we've done just a whole lot of stuff this morning and has been very productive. I will work on that draft regarding financial projections and information. And I do have a question for the other two supervisors. Did either of you do the survey that Ames sent out, the virtual meeting to provide input on the Ames transportation system?
This is Laura. Yes, I did. Since I'm on the AAMPO, I did, participate in that. I also have another link for the board members, the AAMPO. But I did do it. It was an interesting, very easy, unless but a techno survey. So I basically, my input was back to roundabouts and paying attention to traffic flow in near the unincorporated areas.
Good. I'm glad you did that. It made me feel very technically backwards. I thought maybe it's the PC. Maybe I should try it on my Mac. So I'm going to try it later today on my Mac. But the layer is totally.
Yeah, it closes out today. So
I have not done it. I just went back to make sure if I did it or not, and I have not. It's flagged, so I will do that when I get off the phone here.
Okay. Hey, do it for me too, would you? You know what I'll say. I thought about just sending somebody an email, and I may still do that.
That works.
Okay. Yeah, you'd think it would. Okay, anything else? If not, I'd entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Who's here? This is Lisa.
Second. Lisa. Well, Lisa always goes first on this one.
Okay.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Merkin, aye. We are adjourned.
Everybody, Laura, I wasn't sure if it was you or me.
Oh, yeah. No.